This is Hard Parking, brought to you by Wright Honda and Wright Toyota out of Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm your host, Jay Binning, recording from my home studio, homemade studio in Gilbert, Arizona. Coming up on today's show, Gentry Stein, two-time yo-yo world champion, randomly met at a local car meet. Incredible individual, great energy, and I really enjoyed having him in the studio. Coming up after this word from 4Wheel Online. For over a decade, 4Wheel Online has been bringing the best truck accessories and truck parts to enhance the appearance and performance of all trucks and SUVs. They are dedicated to providing an extensive range of upgrades that will match any maker model on the road. Their truck products cover everything to give your truck a custom look and added functionality. Need a wheel and tire package? Head over and use the configuration tool. They carry all the major brands of wheels and tires, so go get outfitted today. Visit them online at 4Wheel Online. Sitting here with Gentry Stein, two-time world yo-yo champion. As you guys know, this is a car podcast, but it's not really a car podcast because we met in a parking lot of kind of a smaller Cars and Coffee. And I was like, man, that guy's got a lot of energy. He's got a great smile. That dude's cool as crap. Walked up, introduced himself and walked off. He might have disappeared when he was walking off. So I wasn't quite sure you were real or not, but welcome to Hard Parking.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm stoked. I've never been on a car podcast before, so this is the first.
There's a lot of people, I think, that come to this podcast and they're like, oh, Hard Parking, this is going to be awesome, man. I want to hear about the latest vehicles that are coming out and industry trends. And what the hell are they talking about? Yo-yos?
Yeah, man. And when I first introduced myself to you when we met over at 4Tail 4,
yeah,
it was cool because when you said you had a podcast, I mean, I'm into cars, but the reason I love cars is the same reason I love all the other stuff that I do. It's the same reason why I'm into yo-yos. And so the biggest thing that yo-yo has taught me is that I'm able to connect with other people that also do yo-yo through other things too. Sure. And then regardless of what else they're into, we can connect on it because it's all rooted in the same thing. And so when you said that's how you approach your podcast, I'm like, oh, this is dope. This is like exactly in line with what I'm into.
It's the connection.
Yeah, yeah.
You like cars? Cool. Me too. Hey, man, so what else is going on?
Yeah.
But, you know, and I don't even think you said anything about yo-yos.
No, when we first met, maybe.
Yeah,
not.
I think maybe you had not. Said, I don't know, we were talking about, I think you asked me if I like living here or something. I go, yeah. And you go, yeah, I'm here half the time. Mm-hmm. I think I spend half the year living out of, I don't know, apartments or condos or traveling other parts of the world. I'm like, okay, there's something there. He didn't force it. I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
And then I looked you up. I'm like, oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
And
I think you may have sent me a random message saying, what about this yo-yo thing? Tell me about this. I'm like, yeah. Oh, we can get to it at some point.
Well, you know, what's cool about it is you weren't like, hi, I'm Gentry Stein and this is what I do. What do you do for a living? You know, which one of these cars is yours? I mean, you ask, but that's what people ask. And, you know, to me, it's more natural because especially in the car world and here in, you know, Arizona, Phoenix, Scottsdale area, one of the first things people ask is, what do you do for a living?
Mm.
What car did you bring? And I don't think there's necessarily anything that wrong with it, but sometimes it feels a little forced because if I don't answer correctly, then the conversation ends there because I'm no longer someone you can network with. Therefore, your interest is flown and you moved on to the next person.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You kind of felt some of that as well.
I mean, I think I've felt that in different places that I've been.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, LA not just especially. Yeah, I don't mean to say just here in Arizona, but just in, you know, some of those car circles that we find ourselves in.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it also comes down to like the people that you do see at car events sometimes. People are into cars for different reasons. I think it's actually a really good thing.
Yeah.
But only if you're able to see like, well, these people are into cars because they're super, they like to nerd out on the engineering behind them. Or some people like cars because they like the attention. Or some people like cars because they like how it makes them feel when they're driving. Or just the aesthetics of the design of the exterior of the car. Like when people all come together for one purpose, but they like that purpose for different reasons, then sometimes even though the thing that's bringing them together might feel like they should be able to relate to people on that, it's like they really like different things and the car is just like the medium that's bringing them together. So in the same way that I was talking about at the beginning, how it can be cool to relate to people through that because it's the same, I think it could also go the other way.
Yeah, I agree. I tried to set you up there and you didn't fall for it. So.
Oh, what were you?
You're like, yeah, those Scottsdale people.
Oh, no.
So you pulled up in a 370Z, really nice one. I think I heard you coming around the corner. And that's why you're here, because, you know, I have the Infiniti, and so we're kind of car family. Otherwise, you wouldn't be allowed to be here, though. You know, how long have you had that thing? Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I got the 370. It's a first edition or V1 Nismo. So they made the car from 2009 to 2013 or 2009 to 2014. I got it, I want to say 2 years ago, and man, I love the car. I mean,
it's nice.
I didn't pay a ton of money for it. You know, I could have paid more for a brand new like Toyota Camry than I paid for this car, but I have so much fun with it. It's very, I mean, it's close to as analog as you can get for a car that was made in 2010. I mean, it's great manual transmission, hydraulic steering. It sounds good. A lot of 370Zs don't sound good. They sound very raspy. And but I have an exhaust by a brand called Motordyne, and they have these big resonators on the back that take away a lot of that raspiness. So it doesn't really sound like a lot of the other 370Zs out there.
Right.
It's got a nice sound, and it's not too crazy, but a little bit exhilarating when you step on it.
Yeah, so. A lot of our fellow Infiniti Nissan family, they get a little crazy to where you hear those Vs coming down the road, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
man, those, it's like some of my Audi friends and BMW friends, you know, a little bit too much pop. That's all the cars I even want to talk about, man. Gentry Stein. So Yo-Yo, I'll be honest with you. It's like, wait, Yo-Yo? This dude's like 10 foot tall. When I think of Yo-Yo, I think of some short little, I don't know, Asian dude just ripping it up on TikTok or something. But you're not just a Yo-Yo dude. You're like a world champ. What got you into that hobby? And these are going to be some of the more red carpet questions that probably anybody's going to ask you on the podcast. No,
it's all good, man.
Yeah, what got you into that? It's fascinating.
Yeah, so I started yo-yoing when I was 8 years old. And I was just a kid that loved to do everything. I played sports. I loved to do art. I was into skateboarding. And then I heard about the National Yo-Yo Museum. Did you know that exists?
I do. I just learned it.
Yeah, it's in Chico, California, which is my hometown. That's where I grew up. So, of course, I was living there at the time when I was 8. I was like, oh, I got to go check this out. And a friend of mine told me they had lessons there. And so I just went. And I was super shy at the time. I was like one of those kids that would just hide behind my mom. Like I was too scared to talk to anyone, too scared to put myself out there. But I eventually went to the lessons and didn't try it the first time I went. I just saw it and I was so enamored by what people were doing, because I didn't know that type of thing was possible with a yo-yo. I mean, I had seen some of the basic tricks that people had done before, and you know, everyone has seen those basic, like, rock the baby around the world, but everyone was doing completely different types of tricks before. The yo-yo was, like, all tied up in the string. I'm like, whoa, what is going on here? I gotta learn this. So I just kept going to the lessons, and before I knew it, I was traveling to my first contest in San Francisco.
So what, how old now? So you started
So that was, like, from 8 to, like, 12. Okay. So I did it for a couple years and then took a couple years break, and then started again when I was in like sixth grade, I think. And then I started going to competitions. And at that time, it was very new to me to like leave my hometown. I didn't grow up with, you know, a bunch of money traveling all the time. Like to go over to San Francisco was kind of a big deal for me. It was only a 3-hour drive away, but, you know, made it work to go to this event. And then I just epically failed in my first contest, and I was so devastated, and I told myself, you know what, I'm not going to let this happen again. And so I trained my ass off for the next 6 months, and then left California for the first time and went to Seattle and competed there, and I got second place in the regional contest that happened there. And then everything just like kicked off from that point. I got my first sponsor, and then I started going to more contests, and people in the yo-yo scene started to know who I was. And it was very interesting because it was like this whole new world that was in front of me, just because I put myself out there in that way that I hadn't done before at that point in my life.
Wow. So let's go back. You said you failed miserably. You know, what was that? Was it just nerves? You practiced this thing and you got it down, but then when you get up there, you just couldn't get anything going or?
Yeah, man. I mean, I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Just trying something new and that's intimidating, you know?
Sure.
But it's, I always like to call back to that moment because a huge part of why I still do what I'm doing now is to help give kids that are just getting into it as good of an experience as they can, because I remember how fun I had at that time. Like, I remember how I felt going to my first contest, and I remember looking up to, you know, other yo-yo players at that time. Then they were the age that I am now. And so I was like, man, nice. These are the coolest people ever. Like,
right.
I want to be like them. And now that I've kind of made myself or brought myself into this situation, now I have the ability to help give that experience to the kids that are in it now. So yeah, man, it's been a fun journey for sure.
So how long have you been doing this?
Oh, it's been like, I guess it's been like 18 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
18 years.
Yeah.
Two-time world champion. How long did it get to that point?
Mm-hmm.
And what's that process like? So you said you went to your first competition and people started knowing who you were once you got second place. Are we talking dozens of kids, hundreds of kids, thousands of kids? Because when I've talked about you before, everyone's like, oh, that's a thing. I'm like, yeah, that's a thing. Like, I've watched your videos when you go live from places, and I've watched videos on your YouTube, and I'm like, this is a huge thing. It's just, does it still feel kind of underworldly, or is it like those who know? Because we all knew about skateboards, and we all knew about this, and we all knew about that. And it kind of feels like it's kind of in the same, but not really.
Yeah. I mean, back in the 90s, skateboarding had this, like, it kind of blew up and it turned into what it is now. And I think yo-yo has kind of had those phases. But now with social media and the place that it is, that's happening again. We're seeing a lot more growth within the scene. But a lot of that growth is able to be nurtured better because kids can go online and learn tricks easier. They have easier access to continue to get better. And so, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about the World Yo-Yo Contest, usually 1,000 to 1,500 people show up.
Wow.
There's a couple hundred competitors that are the top in the world that all come together. So yeah, man, there's a lot to talk about, but back to your question about from when I first started competing and what that journey was like to get to the world level. So after that second contest, I then continued for the next couple years competing at national contests. I competed in my first Worlds in 2011, and then just continued competing and getting better and better. And then eventually I won my first Worlds in 2014. That was in the Czech Republic. And so it's funny, it kind of circles back into the car stuff a little bit, because when I went to the Czech Republic, I first went to Japan to train for about a month and a half before the World Contest. And so it was my first experience again, but leaving the country this time. And so that was kind of the time where I was just getting into cars a little bit. But now I've been to Japan like 10 times and I haven't really experienced any of the car culture there, because I'm always going there for stuff.
So please tell me. So you go to Japan to train.
Yeah.
Please tell me there's some old yo-yo champion at the top of some 400 step temple. What's that like?
Yeah, so there's a huge yo-yo scene in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
The top players, like the world champions of the last, I would say, 20 years, a majority of them are from Japan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so a lot of the judges that judge at the World Contest are also from Japan. And so the scene is very developed there.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of, there's a reason that I went there. Like, that was the place to go to train. And so going to Japan and kind of seeing not just how they approach yo-yo, but just the culture in general, I would say it was one of the biggest drivers for me to be able to actually win, to just like go through that experience of seeing how people live their life completely different. They just see the world in a different way. And then training every day with the other competitors from there, it allowed me to kind of integrate that into the yo-yo training. And yeah, it worked out. It was a pretty amazing experience.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you took a 2-year break early on. Was that just getting bored, or were there life events? And then what's motivated you throughout the years to keep doing it with all the distractions, cars, family, girlfriends, you know, whatever else, you know, and maybe the success is kind of what kept you going. Like what kept you going this whole time?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of things. I think it first starts with yo-yos naturally are something that you can carry around with you everywhere. So I'm somebody who, like, my brain needs to be stimulated all the time. And so you mentioned distractions and everything. Like, yo-yos were actually something that would help me get through difficult times, right, or help me not get distracted by other things, because I could constantly have the yo-yo on me. And at any moment, I could be training. If you're, you know, wanting to go play basketball, like, you have to find, you have to have a basketball that you can't take with you everywhere. You have to find a hoop. You have to find, like, it's a lot more difficult to just pull out the basketball and start training. There's more requirements, sure, to that. With the yo-yo, you can just take it with you anywhere. So regardless of what I was doing, I always had a yo-yo on me, and I always could feel like I was making progress, kind of. Like, even when I was just when I was coming home from school, or when I was waiting in line at a restaurant or something, like, at all times I could be working on my craft at all these little random times. And I think naturally, like, that fits really well into how my brain works. And then just feeling the reward of learning new tricks. But then also, I would say the biggest thing is that kind of hooked me into the competition side of things was creating routines and choreographing routines to music. So that was kind of the thing that, like, I always wanted to make my yo-yo routines in a way that would be entertaining for people who weren't in the yo-yo scene. Right. And then I also approached the contest in a very strategic way. So I was able to take advantage of the rule set and make a routine that would score the highest, but also do it in this way that's focused on choreography, focused on stage presence, and do it in a way that would get more people to see it. And so along in that, I was able to, then when the contest footage would come out, it would get more views on YouTube than the typical contest footage was. And then it would start to bring other opportunities. And then eventually I would, you know, like, get hit up by a TV show to come on the TV show, but that's because they had seen my video from the world contest. And
right.
Yeah, it just kind of, I would say the way I approached yo-yo brought in all these other opportunities. And as I started to recognize that these other opportunities were coming into my life because of that, I just kept going hard and saying yes to all of them. And then that continued to bring more and more opportunities. And that's just kind of the way it keeps going.
How many times have you had to make it, or were you asked to make an appearance on, like, the local news and things like that? And then it's not always, it's here, it's everywhere,
mm-hmm,
correct? Like, how many appearances do you think you've made?
I don't know. I've done some news stuff. I've done some news stuff in, you know, California, Seattle.
Yeah.
But I've also done some TV stuff. I was on the Steve Harvey Show.
Oh, yeah?
That was pretty fun.
That's cool.
I did it was called the Jimmy Fallon Kids Tonight Show. So it's, like, basically a recreation of the Jimmy Fallon Show, but they had kids hosting it.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was amazing. So yeah, I've done a bunch of different things like that. And all of them ultimately are different experiences, but they're a way for me to just be able to share what I'm doing. And
what's the strangest yo-yo experience you've had, or appearance, where maybe you've showed up and you're like, okay, what is going on here?
Oh, the strangest one. I don't know. I wouldn't say I've had too many strange experiences, like weird ones. But there have been a few situations where most people would think, like, how does a yo-yo fit into this?
Okay.
One example would be, a couple years ago, I was reached out
by strip club
by Louis Vuitton. And at first I thought it was fake. Like, it was weird. I just got a random email.
Right.
But they were starting this project called the Louis 200 Project. And the goal was to celebrate the man, Louis Vuitton's 200th birthday, and do it in a way that would call back to what the origin of the brand itself. And so they found 200 different people or entities that they classified as visionaries. And they asked us to recreate our own version of the original Louis Vuitton trunk. And so I ended up making a custom one-of-one Louis Vuitton yo-yo in a miniature custom trunk to fit it in. And so that led to me going to like this, they had a release party in LA for that. And so I yo-yoed there. And then we ended up doing a, they also did a workshop in New York. And I went there and did performances like surrounded by all the trunks. And so it was weird. Like I was randomly doing a yo-yo performance for Louis Vuitton with like this custom one of one piece that I made with them in the back. And so I, not a strange moment, but definitely a moment where I was like, how did it get to this point? You know?
Where's that yo-yo now?
Funny you ask that, man. So little touchy subject because this whole project was supposed to go for charity. Mm-hmm. So they donated 10,000 euros on behalf of each visionary. And then at the end of the project, they were going to be auctioning off each piece. That was like a year and a half ago, and they still haven't auctioned it off yet. So I'm not sure what's going on there. But the yo-yo and trunk is in the possession of Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
At some point, hopefully it will be auctioned off for charity.
Probably not.
So we'll see. We'll see.
That sounds like a pretty cool, unique piece, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the biggest challenge you've had on the road with all the travel? And how many days does it differ depending on the year? But on average, how long are you gone? And is this considered home?
Yeah. So I just moved to Phoenix permanently about 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The previous 2 years, I had been traveling, living between Phoenix and LA. And then last year, or 2022, I was living internationally. So I just living in Airbnbs and traveling. Not doing any extreme amount of yo-yo stuff throughout those travels, but just able to live anywhere while making YouTube videos and that kind of thing. So I haven't competed since 2019.
Mm-hmm.
When I was competing, things looked a little different because I was like training every day for contests. And I would say like that kind of leads into, I would say the biggest struggle I've had is going from training every day for contests, kind of living almost like an athlete does, like a professional athlete would, you know, their whole life revolves around training, and then deciding to retire from competing and moving on to bigger goals to try to grow yo-yoing, creating content online. It's a very different world to go from like one extreme of having one specific goal and wanting to be the best in the world and maintain that, and then just all of a sudden stopping that.
Oh, I bet.
And operating a business and that has multiple angles. And now it's like my brain gets pushed to all these different areas when before it was just like streamlined on this one goal. And then I would practice all year for the goal, hit the goal or not. And then if I hit it, I would live it up a little and then I would work toward it again. But now it's like, the goals are a little less tangible, right? There's not like a competition to be winning. It's like, how do I continue to do this in a way that can provide the lifestyle I want? Like that's the goal, but that's not, there's no tangible thing there. You know, it's a little bit more difficult.
At some point, yeah, it's probably gonna, so it sounds like you're an ambassador now, you know, since 2019 for the sport that is yo-yo. How do you find work? People are reaching out to you. You're reaching out to other people. Hey, it's Gentry Stein, whatever. Like, how does that work for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's all different things. So my main, I guess right now, the main thing is YouTube video. So I have an online store and then I create YouTube videos and other videos on social media that drive traffic to the online store. So that's kind of the root of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course there's like ad revenue from YouTube and stuff, but It's you got to get a lot of views to make a lot of money on YouTube ads, especially in a niche that is like not as common. Then outside of the online store that's kind of driven by me, we also sell yo-yos to, we distribute yo-yos all around the world. So like recently, we just started working with a company in Australia called Woolworths.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grocery, it's like a supermarket. They have over 1,000 stores in Australia. And so, you know, sometimes creating content for that, going out to Australia, I was just over in Melbourne doing a trade show, meeting up with those buyers, you know, looking for other stores to sell the product into. So yeah, it's just a lot of different angles.
Sure. Yeah. The Gentry Stein collection.
Yeah.
Right. We got one of those right here and we're going to string it up in a little bit.
Yeah, baby.
Maybe get some video of this guy
this
out here.
This man supported me right here. He, after we met, he picked this yo-yo up right from my website. And I said, hey, I'll send you a refund for it. He's like, no, I want to support you.
That. No.
I want to support you. And yeah. So I appreciate it, man.
I bought a case for it and the case is too small.
But there's a problem, man. The string is not on it.
The string's not on it.
We got to fix that. And then I'll teach you a trick as well.
All right.
So we have one end here, right? This goes on the finger. So we're going to take the other end that looks like it just...
So first off, it comes with one end tied, and that's a mistake that people make, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes with the old school yo-yos, they didn't come apart. So you'd have to find unique ways to put the string onto it, especially if you got it knotted up or something. You'd have to cut the string and then retie it on. But this yo-yo comes apart. So modern yo-yos have ball bearings on the inside. And so that's what allows you to do all of the crazy tricks, is that bearing allows it to spin for a really long time. This yo-yo is made on a CNC lathe at a higher level of precision than airplane parts. So yo-yos need to spin perfectly smooth.
Right.
And in order to achieve that, it's very difficult. So it has to be very precisely machined. And you also want to push the weight out toward the edge so it will spin longer and it will be more stable during tricks. So it's a lot more advanced than the old school yo-yos that a lot of people think of. So to get the string on it, all you do is untwist it, open it up.
So it's a closed loop system.
And then you just, slide it over and twist it back up.
Huh.
And you're good.
That wasn't very long.
There you go.
Or you can do like me and most people and sit there and monkey with it and try to put it on there without it slipping over.
Yeah, I mean, so you also bought, this is like a pro model yo-yo, right? So this yo-yo right here is one of my signature models. It's called the Shutter Wide Angle. And this is what I used to win my most recent world contest. So it's the exact model that I used. So it's not meant to learn the basics with.
Sure.
Yeah, it's actually called an unresponsive yo-yo. I can show you in a second. Unresponsive means it doesn't respond to your hand with a tug when you pull it up. When you think of a yo-yo, most of the time you think of tugging it up and it comes back. But if that type of yo-yo, if you try to do more advanced tricks with that type of yo-yo, it's just going to snag on the string. And so this yo-yo, because it doesn't respond back, it has much less friction. You have to do a trick called the bind. I can just show you real quick here. You have to do a trick called the bind that looks like this to bring the yo-yo back.
Oh.
If you just try to pull it up, it doesn't come back up.
Yeah, I realized that the other day when I was playing with it before I took the string off of it.
That's how you can do. Yeah.
I put the string on. I'm like, it's not going anywhere. I go like this and I couldn't get it to come back. I was like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Gentry, get over here, man. You got to show me how to do this.
I got you. We'll get you going with it.
Let me ask you about training, because everyone's probably wondering, as I wonder, okay, the training is rigorous. And if you want to be a professional, whatever you do, it's tough. Nothing's easy. What's training for yo-yo?
Yeah. So, I mean, the training is not just the tricks. That's what a lot of people think of right off the bat, is like, oh, you're playing with the yo-yo physically for 8 to 10 hours a day. And it's like, no, some days, yes. But most of the time, it's approaching all parts of what the contest is asking for. So the contests are 3 minutes long. It's a 3 minute long routine and it's all choreographed to music. And the judges are looking at two different sides of the performance, the technical side and the performance side. So to judge the technical side, they have two clickers in their hand. It's kind of like pitching counters.
Right.
And one is for negatives, one's for positives. So as you're doing the tricks, each little movement that you do, they're analyzing it in real time and assessing a value to the movement as you do it.
Interesting.
And so it's very intricate. And because the judges are human, also, there's this kind of subconscious level to it where the way you perform the trick can also have an effect on how difficult it looks. And so there's a lot of strategy that goes into it. And that's just the technical side. The performance side, they're looking at your musicality, your choreography, how you move around the stage, how you use the stage in accordance with the kind of storyline of the routine. Not a story in the sense of like you're pretending to be a character.
Sure, yeah.
Really. It's not as deep as that, but it's more like a routine should follow this kind of story structure in the sense that it takes the viewer through different emotions as they're watching. Mm. And so if you start the routine with, let's say, a smaller trick and the music is a little bit more chill at the beginning, then it starts to build up. You start to expand the types of movements that you're doing. The tricks start to get a little bit bigger. And then that type of creating the routine in that way brings the audience through these emotions, right? They start to get excited as the trick's getting bigger, as the right. music's getting more intense. And then the music drops. And then you throw the yo-yo out in front of you horizontally. And it's a really big trick that's shooting around, going behind the back. Like it, you can have that effect on the audience. And then it also has a positive effect on the judges, because as they're feeling those emotions during the routine, they're more likely to score you higher, even though technically it doesn't say that on paper.
Sure, it's the human element.
Yeah, so there's a lot of strategy right. that goes into it. Yeah, so that's both sides of the judging. I mean, we could sit here and talk for hours about the intricacies of yo-yo judging, but that's a
sure.
basic overall idea of it.
So then I'm imagining, because it's routine based, you have the music and you don't necessarily have the yo-yo on you, but you're still going through the movements, almost like you're practicing kung fu or something, right? Everything has to be fluid and pop, because when you're explaining it, the movements, the keys, I'm imagining some of the dance competitions that I've seen.
Yeah, it's very similar,
right? To where yeah. a regular person might be watching it just for the overall flow, but if you really start keying in, it's like, okay, this person and this person did the same dance. This person executed it better. They popped at the right time, and their body yeah. flowed at the right time, and you know they did it at the right part of the song or the music. So it's, man, I can't imagine doing that forever. And you have to be able to, I'm guessing you find some sort of a zen with that though too.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, being up on stage, and in order to get to that kind of zen flow state, it takes a lot of work beforehand. So like you need to get the routine to the point where you know every single beat of the song, you know every single movement that you're doing with the yo-yo, and having not to focus on hitting it. Like you have to be able to win the contest, you have to go at like 95% perfection. Like you really can't make many mistakes. And so to be doing all the choreography, hitting all of the tricks, and also like doing that in an entertaining way that looks good, you have to put in a lot of work beforehand. But if you can get to that point and you're just flowing on stage that way, and you're taking in the energy of the audience and they're cheering, and it's almost like, I'll make the joke sometimes, like when people ask how long I've been yo-yoing, I'm like, oh, like a week, and it just, the yo-yo kind of just does it for me.
Yeah.
But
really?
Yeah. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, these yo-yos nowadays are like really cool. It just kind of does it for you. But after that much practice being on stage, it's like, yeah. you don't really have time to focus on everything you're doing. You have to just let your body do it. And it's almost like, it feels like I'm watching my, like, I don't know, it's like an out of body experience almost. It's out of body experience in the way that I feel like I'm watching myself, but it's the most in body experience and the feeling that I get knowing that I'm up there on stage. It's like the weirdest.
No,
it's,
man,
the coolest thing, man.
It's, that makes,
that's, it's a, one of the best feelings in the world for sure. And that's something that I really sense. Miss from competing.
I would imagine like with anything, it goes by fast as hell. And, but as you get more seasoned, it slows down. Is it the same deal with yo-yo, or is it always just kind of the same?
I don't know, man. I think each time getting on stage has been different. After competing for the first 5 years, I stopped competing in the regional contests and just started competing in the nationals and the worlds. And so there's a lot of pressure because you train all year and then you get the one moment at the world contest.
So it's only one round?
And yeah. It's just, well, so there's different preliminary rounds to get to the finals, but
okay,
it doesn't, you know, you just want to get through right. to the final, because you don't become world champion from winning in the preliminary round. You have to be the top.
It's a bracket or whatever.
Yeah. And so it's, man, it's a lot of pressure for sure. So it's a mixture of like getting off stage and almost not remembering what happened, but then you just feel this sense of euphoria that you know, if it went well, you feel that. But then the other thing that's really interesting about the way these yo-yo contests work is the results don't come out for like a couple hours after the competition happens, because they're tallying all the scores. They're like looking over everything to make sure they got things right. They don't go back and adjust any scores. All the scoring happens in real time. But in something like the Olympics, you go and do your thing and then you immediately look up and see your score. But with this, it's like there's those couple hours where it's like, man, it's up to the judges at that point. And I've always approached it in a way to where I had to know that I was going to win before I did it. Like every year, man,
mindset
for like 12 years that I competed at Worlds, I knew for sure I was going to win. I only won twice,
but like, you won twice,
but I knew. And so, and so if I didn't have that mindset, I maybe wouldn't have won. But then it also leads you into the place where it's like, well, if you knew for sure you were going to win and it went well, but you didn't win, now what? There's two options. It was either the judge's fault or it was something that you actually did wrong. And it's most at the World Yo-Yo Contest, the judges know what they're doing. It's not the judge's fault. And so it always falls back on to, like, it would always fall back onto me is like, well, I was so confident that I was going to win, but then I didn't. What did I do wrong? Like, how do I need to change this? And so that after the contest, it would lead me into like my approach for the next year and how I want to do it.
Or it could be, I did everything exactly the way I wanted to, but this person over here did things better in the eyes of the judges.
Exactly.
So I guess you can probably go back and watch the footage and be like, oh, there, you know, because I imagine there's probably, you know, no room for error. When you guys are waiting, are you together? Are you separated? Are you by yourself just waiting? Or do you guys have like a little, okay, next up, Gentry Stein. Yeah, man, you got this.
Yeah, so usually during the finals, there's a room where all the players are practicing. And some of the players are in there, some are out doing their own thing. But then after that, the event's still going on. So some players will go up to their hotel room and just chill. For me, I'm there half the reason I'm there is to hang out with the kids. And like I said before, give them a good experience. So I'm always there teaching kids tricks, hanging out with kids. When the finals are going on, there's this practice room, right? And some players are in there, but some players don't like to watch what's happening on the stage because it can make you feel more nervous. Like you see that one of the top competitors just messed up. Like, how is that going to affect what you do? And so each year, you'd think that it would get easier, like the nerves would lessen a little bit, but it's not the case. Like, I would be nervous every time. And so my most recent world contest, the last one that I competed in, I think I found the best approach that worked for me. So it took like 12 years to get there. But what I ended up doing was taking in all of the energy from the crowd. So like when the finals were going on, I went out into the crowd and watched my competitors do their performance and listened to the crowd cheering for them. And so instead of going and sitting to the side and like chilling out and trying to relax and like get calm before, it's like I just leaned into the energy of the room. Because you said earlier, it seems like maybe it's like a dance competition. It very much is. It's very hyped in the room. Like the music is really loud. Everyone's packed together. It's really hype. And so I actually tried this for the first time going out into the audience and taking in that energy and like imagining that when they're cheering for the person that's up there, imagining that they're actually cheering for me. And so I spent like 30 minutes to an hour of the finals leading up to my performance in that zone, like feeling what it's like. So that way, when I went up onto the stage, I'd already been in that environment leading up to it. Whereas previous years, when I tried to chill out, it's like I would become so calm, and then you get up on stage and everyone is screaming and cheering, and it's like, whoa, this is overwhelming.
Sure.
And then it kind of throws you off a little bit. So, but every person's different, but that's kind of the thing that I wish I would have figured out earlier on that worked for me.
Once you figured it out, you're like, all right, I'm done. I'm through with this. Yeah. What's next for Gentry Stein?
Yeah, man. So what's next is I will continue to play. That is the thing that has driven me for everything I do in my life is seeking play. And so I'll continue to do that through yo-yos. I'll continue to do that through other things like cars. But ultimately, I want to continue to bring yo-yo to more kids because I know how beneficial it's been for my life. And I know how beneficial it can be for other kids. I have taught thousands of kids how to yo-yo. I've seen how big of an impact it makes on them. I see kids that, you know, don't know how to socially engage with other kids. They don't have much confidence. And then you put a yo-yo in their hand and they feel this sense of accomplishment that maybe they've never really felt in their life before. And all of a sudden, it's like they're a different kid. And so that is the impact that I want to be making. And so it's a big driver for me, and it's very fulfilling when I'm able to create the lifestyle that I want, love life, and do it in a way that I know is helping kids along the way.
Yeah, they're not the 8-year-old hiding behind their mother's leg.
No.
Do you have any siblings?
I do. Yeah, I have an older brother.
Wow, so you're the youngest too.
Yeah.
I would imagine your older brother to be kind of the quiet one, and then you know. Siblings are like that.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. He actually is going back to school right now, studying good business. And he was doing personal training for a little while. And I couldn't say a bad thing about my brother. I love that guy.
Well, thanks for coming by the podcast. How can people catch up to you? I know gentrystein.com and whatever else.
Yeah. So my website's gentrystein.com. My Instagram, YouTube, TikTok is all at gentrystein. GENTRYSTEIN. You can find me there, learn some tricks. And yeah, Jay, I think it's time we get the yo-yo on your finger, man.
Yeah, I think it's time. So if you guys watch the video portion of this, you'll be able to see me racking up a yo-yo and maybe Gentry showing us some tricks. But
yeah,
other than that, let's get it done.
All right. Thanks, man.
That interview was brought to you by The Cell Shop, an Arizona-based retailer that strives to be your destination of choice for wireless services, whether Arizona, Washington State, California, Texas, and Florida. They're an authorized AT&T dealer, so visit them at cellshop.us and get connected today. Want to thank Wright Honda and Wright Toyota for oilonline.com, Cell Shop Wireless Services, AutoCannon, officially licensed Honda and Acura gear, Patreon business supporters, Cuy Automotive out of Winter Garden, Florida, Automotive Specialty Tool out of Owings Mills, Maryland, Pell Construction out of Calumny, Michigan, Bee House Small Home Design out of Ashburg, Virginia, and Traverse City, Michigan. Shaping success with the one and only West Tankersley out of Boise, Idaho. You can join the Patreon for as little as $3 a month. Get access to bonus audio as well as show swag. Special thanks to Mark Stillman, Catherine Cox, Eddie Ramos, Richard Graves, Byron Jones, Bo Jung, Alice Gumina, Drew Bunkley, and Yasu Chiba. Questions, comments, concerns, hardparkingpodcast@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at jfinning. Follow me on the TikTok machine at hardparkingj. That's right, I did that. Join the Hard Parking Violations Facebook group because I can't grow without you telling the world how great this show is. Let's do this. Let's grow this scene together. Please subscribe, leave a positive review, and I'll talk to you next week.
Shut up!